Hi and welcome to The Walk, I'm Father Roderick. This music may sound a little bit familiar because it evokes the world of Jurassic Park. In fact, I'm hunting for dinosaurs as we speak. I'm playing this new mobile app called Jurassic World Alive, and I've just spotted a dinosaur here. It is a Parasaurolophus. And it's standing here 18 meters away from me on the crossroads next to my church. I'm going to try to tranquilize it using a drone that I can guide with my thumb. And then I need to try to launch some tranquilizers and hit the mark. That's number one. And, oh, I just missed that one. It's really hard because it's moving, and it's moving faster. There you go. That's a direct hit. And I failed to get it there. So I gathered 35% of his DNA, which I can then use to upgrade that particular dinosaur. Whoops. And of course, I have to be very careful because I almost got run over, not by a dinosaur, but by a bike. That's a real danger of these mobile games. You're so concentrated on catching the next dinosaur that you don't pay attention as to where you are walking. And of course, these dinosaurs are not real. They're just visible on my phone screen, but the rest of the traffic is. So I'm now heading to, let's see, here's another small dinosaur. And it's the same one. It's a Parasaurolophus. My goodness, those words. And it's basically the same thing over and over. What makes this game fun is that you will find sometimes rare specimens. And then there's also kind of the gamey aspect of trying to shoot it down with the tranquilizer darts. And of course your drone and the dinosaur are both moving, which makes aiming very difficult, and there's a timer also running. So, you know, it's not high quality gaming, but it works. I got 43% of its DNA, which can hopefully then bring me to the next level. And if you've gathered a number of dinosaurs, then over time you can fight other people that play this game and their dinosaurs with your own dinosaurs. And that whole gameplay is very similar. I'm going to stop now because otherwise I'm not going to pay attention to what I'm saying. But that is, I think, the kind of the addictive part of it. It's not just gathering all these dinosaurs, but it's also trying to win these Pokemon-like tournaments. And it's very well implemented. The only problem is that sometimes the connection breaks for some reason to the servers. But the previous games that I've played that are based on this same mechanics have similar problems as well. It's a beautiful late afternoon. It's almost dinner time. It's around 6 o'clock. And I can smell the barbecues in the various gardens. I'm recording this on a Saturday evening, so it's the weekend. Kids are playing outside. There's some kids here on the bridge on my right. They're watching someone who is trying to catch a fish with a green fishing rod. There's some other kids playing on the school premises. There's a primary school here on the left, and I'm walking around just to try to move a little bit, and it's really necessary that I move more. I've had an exhausting week for various reasons. I'll talk about that a little bit later. And I feel that if I'm not careful, I'm getting out of shape even more. And one of the things that I want to do is to burn more calories per day and also be more careful about what I eat. It's funny, this morning I listened to the weekly episode of Cliff Ravenscraft's show, and he was talking about his weight loss gains and or weight loss goals, and some of the temporary hiccups that he experienced. And he was talking about one of the reasons that he didn't meet the goal that he set himself a while ago, and that reason was emotional eating, snacking, compulsive snacking. And what I found interesting is that he mentioned that he knew exactly why he was snacking so much. It was because of other things in his life that he was unhappy about. He's currently promoting a conference later this year, and he felt that he had not made as much progress as he wanted, and was unhappy about that, and then that causes perhaps distress, which you then compensate by eating, because eating makes you feel good, snacking makes you feel happy, and then you kind of forget about the rest. And it hit me, even though I kind of know the mechanics of emotional eating, but I told myself I'm going through exactly the same thing right now. I'm eating healthier than ever before. I'm always cooking my own meals. I rarely eat junk food. And I enjoy cooking, and I try to eat less. But the reason that I'm not losing weight, and this has been a problem for several months now, and I need to lose weight. I need to lose at least, I'd say at least 12 to 14 pounds to get back to a healthy, slim Father Roderick that is able to run a marathon, which is in my books for October this year. So I urgently need to lose some of those pounds. And the reason that I didn't was not that I was not eating healthy, but it was also the snacking. It's usually in the evenings when I watch TV. This has been a long time problem. I've had this habit of snacking while watching TV for years and years. And it's one of the reasons that I actually got rid of the television in my living room and the nice, comfortable IKEA chair that I would sit in, thinking that if I would just use the TV as a PC monitor, I could still watch television and movies, but it would be less comfortable and I would not be having the same temptation to snack. Well, turns out my working desk is just as good a snacking table as the little table that I was using in the living room. So it was the stupid idea that if I would just change the position of the screen, it would also change my behavior. Whereas it starts, of course, with the will to change your behavior. And then the rest is less important. And also, while listening to Cliff, I noticed that one of the reasons that I do that is because I am struggling with a number of things during the day. And watching TV and snacking is a way to try to push those unhappy feelings away and compensate by eating. And it's not that I'm gaining weight, but I'm not losing any, even though I'm much more active and I'm eating much healthier than I used to a couple of months ago. So I decided to dive a little bit deeper. What is going on? Why do I feel unhappy about certain things? So instead of trying to combat the symptoms, I'm trying to go to the root of the problem. And this past week has been particularly difficult for a number of reasons. The week was so different from what I planned. I wanted to film two episodes of my TV show. I also wanted to help Hugo, who is currently doing the editing of the June documentary about my Camino. So I knew that he would probably need some guidance and some extra material, some voiceovers. I was planning on doing that. And I'd already kind of given up on the idea of filming in Panama, which was the original plan, that I would be going to Panama for a week and follow one of the Dutch organizers of the World Youth Day, program there, while he was exploring the country. But the preparations were so insufficient that we decided that it wouldn't be worth the risk, because it's a bit of a risky country to travel in by yourself. So I'd given up that, but I was totally hoping that we could somehow film for 2 or 3 days in the north of the country and get those two shows done. But also the topic of those shows had been changed at the very last moment. At first we were asked to contact a religious order, and they would allegedly want to sponsor the show if we would to take one of the topics in their sphere of interest. And that turned out to be completely false lead. They had no interest in collaborating on this TV show. And that was the entire reason that I proposed to go film in the north. And so I tried to figure out some other stuff, and I just couldn't really figure out a good story. And I did something that I think is always a mistake. It's when you put the means before the goal. So one of the reasons that I wanted to create two episodes of my TV show was that, of course, it's two more TV shows. It creates revenue. It is also work that I could do way in advance, so it would free me up for later this year. But instead of first thinking of a good story to tell, I was like, well, we'll just go there and we'll just go to various places and do some interviews and get it over with. And then a number of those interviews were canceled at the last moment. And also, personally, I was fighting with that. I was like, I'm trying to do something that is ultimately not satisfying, because my program wants to tell stories that touch people, that help them. And instead, now I'm just gathering scraps and putting some, it's a kind of leftover television. You know, sometimes in my fridge, I've got little bits and pieces of previous meals that I've cooked. And sometimes when I'm really lazy, I just put them in a pan and put some sauce on it, and then I eat it. And I'm like, ew, this is not a meal. This is just a weird combination of completely disjointed elements, and it doesn't taste good at all, and mishmash of stuff. And I still force myself to eat it because I don't want to throw it away. Well, that's kind of how it felt. Like, I'm making television, and yeah, sure, I can fill 25 minutes perhaps, but it's not something I want to serve. And but then, you know, that insight only started to dawn upon me during the week, when, of course, I was going there with Martin, who was going to drive and help me with the production. And he wanted, clearly, of course, to plan everything ahead and make appointments and book the hotels, etc. And I was not feeling it. I was like, I don't know if this is going to work. I'm doubting. But sometimes I feel that I also need to trust other people. And so I was like, well, if Martin says we can do it, then perhaps I should just listen to that and trust it. And in the end, it didn't work out at all. And I learned a hard lesson there. And that is, my initial intuition is almost always right when it comes to these things. When at the beginning I was like, yeah, I don't know, this is not it, this is not enough, then often what I do is I push through anyway. And I force myself and others to do something. And then at the end of the process, I realized, well, this is not feasible. I should have said no right at the beginning. But I didn't, because I felt like I should at least try. I should force myself. I don't know. I wanted to please other people, or all sorts of reasons. Instead of trusting my intuition and my experience, because this is also, the intuition comes from experience. I know what a good story is. And I know also, when there's no story, that's how I also look at the programs that other people make. And in this case, I could have basically decided weeks earlier that this was not going to be enough. And so I was frustrated about that, that we had to change these plans multiple times, and in the end ended up with nothing. And that was the second disappointment, because we all also ended up with nothing when it came to the whole Panama thing. So that's three episodes that were planned for this month. And then I start to panic. It's like, is there enough time left during the summertime to do what we do? And then the documentary about the Camino also took way more time than I planned, and we were falling behind with Star Wars. We had incurred a delay, and so we were able to get that out on the very last day of the month, which is not ideal. And so for this, I was like, perhaps we should postpone this, and if we postpone it, should I do something else? And I was just kind of racking my mind over all these choices and decisions. And then on, I had two really bad days. Like a Monday morning, I woke up and I just had a lousy night. It's really warm in the Netherlands right now, warm and humid. So I hadn't slept well, and that was not the first night that I didn't sleep well. And so I can remember sitting there for about an hour, and I'm feeling really depressed and lousy and frustrated, and like, this is not going to work. And then that entire day stayed like that. And then on Tuesday, I had a meeting, a talk, and it was also a bit of a difficult talk where we had to make some decisions about the for the next. Our next season on TV. And I try to, what I want is to have a very clear vision together with the other people that I work with of what an episode should be and what it should do, so that it's easier to choose our topics and also say no to other topics. And I felt that vision had been lacking for too long. So that was a kind of a tense, at least a meeting. It went well, but beforehand I was tense about it, and I was like, are we going to find that vision? And then on Wednesday I had to write text for voiceovers, and it was another lousy day, and I was like, this is supposed to be my day off. So I forced myself to go to the movies, saw Jurassic World, was a bit disappointed by that. It was not as good as I hoped it would be. And after that, the rest of the day, I was still tomorrow we need to already leave for the north of the country. And I have still a couple of interviews are not planned, are not scheduled. We still don't have green light on some other stuff that we were going to do. So that caused tension. And then on Thursday, I had a meeting with the new pastoral team. So in case you missed it, our bishop has decided to merge the pastoral teams of two big parishes. So we now cover a huge area with 14 churches, I think. Something like that. With only two full-time priests and me as an assistant priest. And then some other lay people. But we needed to talk about how we're going to plan that, and that too is like, it's an uncertain future. I don't know, it's going to have massive repercussions for my own work, for what I do. And so I was tense about that as well. And then Friday, on Thursday itself, we've ultimately decided to cancel the entire trip to the north of the country. Just couldn't make it work. So that was a bit of a relief, but it didn't really leave me satisfied, because I was like, nothing worked out this week. And I think that's one of the main reasons that I fall back into that old behavior of compensating by snacking, and also this immobility, is just lack of energy to do whatever, because discouragement, because depressed feeling. This is the finish. I'm here on the big city square near the public library, and they're putting the finish in place for the marathon tomorrow. It's the annual Amersfoort Marathon. I ran it two or three times, I think, And unfortunately, these marathons are always, nowadays, are always planned on Sundays and earlier. So I think a few years ago, they would start at noon, so I could still run it. Now it starts at like 10:30 or even earlier. So basically anyone who wants to go to church on Sunday morning cannot participate in a marathon, which is a sign of the secularized society that we live in, unfortunately. But also understandable. People are busy, and Sunday is usually a day for athletes to that they can free up. So, but I'm a little bit envious when I see this. I'm like, I want to run a marathon. It's been too long. Yet last year I did not run a marathon, and this year, well, I planned on running the Marathon of Amsterdam, but I would have preferred walking it here or running it here in my own hometown. Oh, I smell food everywhere. There's some food stands here, Vietnamese street food, and those guys are selling fried fish. Smells good. And it's almost getting time for dinner. So what I have decided to do is to go back to the struggle that I had. I think the biggest things that I need to do is, or my lesson learned, is I've got to trust my gut. When I feel that something is not feasible or is not something I should do, instead of pushing myself and everyone to do it, I should discern faster and go with my gut. And also, another lesson that I learned is I need to create way more margin. I've been, out of fear of not having enough time to produce these TV episodes and not being able to deliver the monthly documentaries for Tridio, I've been pushing myself too hard and planning way too much. I remember Terry, who's helping us from time to time with the evaluation of our work, telling me, you should only plan for, 70% of your time, and keep margin, because otherwise you're going to get stuck. And that's how I felt this week. I felt stuck. Despite my best intentions and experience, I still felt that there was no way back, and I had driven myself into a corner, or painted myself into a corner. And that's not a nice position. And then that's why I'm usually also overthinking things. So I was constantly blaming myself, and with the added heat outside and in my apartment, it doesn't really allow for a good night's sleep. So that is those are some of the lessons. And then the deepest level, I think, of this whole issue is something I've learned last year, or discovered last year. I'm still trying to implement it in my life, and I realized that when I was being interviewed by Hugo for the documentary about the Camino, where he asked me about, well, what did you learn? What were the struggles? And in many ways, that pilgrimage was a reflection of life in general, and the choices you make during the Camino resemble the choices that you make in day-to-day life. So that's why that pilgrimage can also be a time of learning and self-discovery. So the biggest issue that I ran into while walking the Camino was to always try to do too much, to walk too far, to push myself too hard, and that would lead to physical injury. And also this sense of pressure, like I'm not walking the Camino the way it's supposed to be to be done. It's not good enough. I don't walk enough. I don't pray enough. I don't have deep insights. I was blaming myself for so many things, until the moment that I discovered that all that stress was caused by the hardship that I inflicted upon myself. It was no one was to blame for this. Not my body, not the expectations of others, not the Camino itself. I was setting all these unattainable goals. I was constantly acting out of this feeling that it was not never good enough, that I should do better or do it differently. And every night I would go to bed thinking I failed. And it was only past the halfway point at the Cruz de Ferro, so this iron cross, that I discovered that probably this struggle came from a very early experience in primary school with a teacher scaring me so much and saying that I was not good enough because my grades were not high enough, and that if I would continue, I would never succeed in life, etc. And I forgot about the details, but I remember the fear. I remember exactly where I was when that happened. And it caused, I think, a trauma and a fear of never being good enough and always trying to do more. And it was that insight that helped me start to say goodbye to that attitude. But I knew back then what I experience now, and that is that that is not something you get rid of in a day or so. It takes a lot of time, and every time that you are falling back in that behavior of trying to do too much, pushing yourself too much, trying to please everyone, and not respecting your own intuition, your own judgment, but always think that you should push yourself because other people know better than you. Every time I notice that behavior and I see its detrimental consequences for my personal life, that's when I have to go back to that time in Spain and let go and ask myself, who wants you to do this? Who says that you need to do all this? And it's ultimately a question of faith. Can you trust God that He loves you the way you are? That He does not require you to be a superhero, to have a magnificent career, to make the right decisions even. He only wants you to be with Him, to walk where He walks, and to try to stay close to Him. And if you do that, you walk the Camino, because Jesus is the Camino. And it's that deep faith, and that requires trust. Because it's also a fight against your inner voice, and sometimes also expectations of other people that tell you, well, you're not good enough. You're only good if you do what I want you to do. And the way to fight that is to affirm, I think, the trust that for God I'm good enough and He loves me. And even if I didn't do anything in my life, He would still love me. And I think that's probably something I should work on. And that would also allow me to let go of expectations and fears of not being good enough. I mean, I've suffered quite a bit because of the struggles that we had about the videos that we produced for a third-party company. And they were setting the bar so high, and they had such, in my eyes, unrealistic expectations that it became one of the most frustrating things that I've done this year. And we were so... it took so much energy, and so for me also a lot of mental energy, and it was draining. And I was like, well, why do I even do this, you know? If it causes so much hardship and so much pain, who says I should do this? And it's that question that leads me to realizing, well, I'm probably doing this because I want to. I think that I should because, well, there may be my ambition to be able to do this. It may also be my desire to prove to other people that I can make programs like this. And it's the perhaps one of the things is also the fear of a good fight, the fear of functional assertiveness, functional anger. Sometimes when people, and I felt that some people were crossing my boundaries time and again, and that went very far. And I, out of fear of a conflict, I stepped away and I tried to please and to do it anyway. Whereas what I should have done is put my fist on the table and say, well, enough. I'm no longer working under these conditions. And if you want what you are demanding, then you can find someone else. And that is so not in my system. And yet I should have. I should have trusted my gut, because I was mad. I was angry about the situation and the way I was treated. But I never expressed it to the people that were causing this. And that has to do with your self-image and what you think you should do, and the patience, that all the virtues that you think you need to display. But sometimes I think it is a virtue to love yourself and to respect yourself when other people don't respect you, and to stand firm and to stand up for yourself, just as you would for someone else. If I would see this behavior directed towards someone I love, like a family member or a friend or a colleague, I would not hesitate one second to get mad and to stand up and raise my voice and say, well, and now it, stop it. But when it concerns me, I don't. And I think that has to do, I think, with a lack of self-worth, perhaps, and that I'm doubting myself too much and I don't trust my instincts. And there's always the fear that if I react and if I get mad and if I stand up for myself, that I may have been wrong after all. You know, it may have been my mistake that I didn't understand something, or that, and yet there was this feeling that no, in this case, I'm the one who is suffering, who is mistreated here. And no matter what the cause is, and there were, you know, I don't want to blame anyone, but sometimes people cross boundaries when they shouldn't. And then no matter what the reason is for that, that is unacceptable. And that's, so the first thing you need to do is to protect the boundary. And then later on you can talk and you can try to figure out what was going wrong and why. But if you let other people cross your boundary and destroy it, then everything is lost. So I was telling myself this the past few days, is like, I need to trust my intuition, stand up for myself, claim margin and create margin, and also defend me against myself, if you know what I mean. So there's also this inner voice that pushes me and that is often too demanding and uncertain. And I have to stand up for myself there as well and tell myself, well, we'll do that later. Well, if it's not feasible, it's not feasible. You can't do magic. And so stop before you destroy yourself. And that is kind of the struggle that I've been involved in for the past week. I have to say that today I was feeling a lot better. I was happy to record my podcast, even though I was still tired. But that feels like a safe place, you know, just banter a little bit. Also there, I had to let go of so many ambitions. What I care for now is I just want to chat with my followers about things I love. And I like that. And it helps with the quality and all those plans that I had of creating short 1-minute videos and summaries. And like, yeah, well, some other time, you know, not now. It's not the most important thing. And if I would try to do too much, it will prevent me from doing anything at all. So I'm really glad to be able to get back to that. And for the next week, I've also decided to take it easy. And, you know, I'm talking about this with you, but I also talked about this with my collaborators, with Martin and with Inge. So they also know the situation that I'm in, and they're very helpful. because they help me also look in the mirror and realize things. And sometimes they say nothing, and they just wait until I realize things myself. Oftentimes they've already seen way ahead of me that I'm doing too much or that I should dial back a little bit. And sometimes they will say that, and they will try to hold me back a little bit. And I'm glad. I'm glad that they are there. And it's also always helps me a lot when in discerning to talk with people that I trust, so that I'm not just imagining things. You know, it helps when someone tells me, like Martin or Inge, well, yeah, I think you're right, and we saw that as well, and we were worried about that too. And no, you're not mistaken about this behavior of that other person. We're mad too, and you're totally right. You know, things like that are incredibly comforting for someone who is basically always a little bit uncertain. And having that confirmation from the people around you helps discern what to do and what the situation truly is. I'm very grateful for that. So I talked with them, and we all agree that next week should be a bit calmer week. And it's very well possible that once I calm down and I don't plan too much, that I get much more productive than if I would plan everything. So, well, it's always complicated. But I just wanted to share that with you. Because sometimes you may be in similar situations, and you may handle those situations much better than I do. I don't pretend that being a priest saves me from my own stupidity or my own fears and doubts. No. But what I try to do is share it with you so that it may help you also discern what to do in your own life. Hope it helps. If you have any advice, then of course I'm always open to that. Just let me know. That's it. Thanks for listening. I smell so much food. I'm getting hungry, so probably gonna head home. I'm on the other side of the town now, and I'll have a quiet evening. I'm just gonna watch some TV, go to bed early. Tomorrow is the last farewell mass with the pastor of our parish, and from next Monday, this upcoming Monday, I'll be the only priest in the entire parish. At least for now. And then September the 1st, the new pastor and the assistant priest will join and help. But for a while, I'll need to do things myself, with, of course, all my parishioners that are trying to find ways to get through this. All right. Talk to you later. And thanks for listening. Take care and God bless.